President Kamala Harris, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Catholics versus Indians, on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising. With Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
The media resorts to personal attacks without any content other than to incite anger.
Welcome back to The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. This is Scott DeCosenza, and I'm here with Tim Donner in studio. Tim, welcome back to The Uprising.
Oh, it's good to be back. Good to be back. You did a nice job the last couple weeks, but, you know, as usual, I was listening to your solo ventures there and saying, yeah, if I was in there, I'd be saying, but he needs to add.
Well, I'll consider that a compliment. That's good pod.
That's true. That's true.
If you're engaged. I think for me, the big, huge story this week is the Indians versus the Catholics. And we're going to get into that, but that'll be the main course.
Cowboys.
Well, I have
Indians.
To say, you know, yeah. Tim, I'm actually very angry with you because I feel like I had the prescience of like a big wave surfer spotting the wave off in the distance when earlier in the week I tried to convince you that this was going to be a big story.
It's true.
And you were basically like, it's a nothing burger. What happened?
It was very interesting, actually. The dynamic was because you alerted both me and Lisa K. Donner, wife, and more importantly, editor-in-chief of LibertyNation.com. You said, look, I pulled this clip. You need to look at it. I want to do an LNTV about it. And Lisa looked at it. She goes, I don't see what's going on here. And then I looked at it and like, I don't even understand this whole thing.
Right.
So I said, nah, just skip it. And by the end of that day, I hate this expression, but it's true. Twitter was blowing up.
Gone viral.
I mean, the whole thing.
All right, well, we're going to break it down for everybody, Let's push that off a little bit, and let's get into officially declared candidate for the Democratic nomination for president, Kamala Harris. Is it Kamala? That's the official now?
Yes, because it's Kamala is better because it sounds closer to Camelot.
Oh, I see.
Reborn Camelot.
You know, one thing I learned that I thought was very interesting about Kamala Harris.
I've always called her Kamala.
Me too, but
so
I think
I don't
it's.
Know.
Did you know that she was Canadian pretty much until she became an adult? Her mother is from the country of India.
Mm-hmm.
Her father is from the country of Jamaica.
Right,
and not just like from there, like when they were kids. I mean, that's where they were. That's where they spent all their time. And she was born in the United States and then lived in Canada from the time when she was like a kid, like 6 years old, until she went off to college in the United States.
Do you say that because it makes her more or less qualified to be president?
It's an interesting question. She's less American, I think, that way, right? I mean, it's just an interesting background for a U.S. president to have.
Well, look at Obama. I mean, Obama spent the bulk of his childhood and his formative years, quote unquote, in Indonesia,
and Hawaii too,
and
Hawaii,
which is not a typical American experience.
Upbringing. Yeah. No, actually, I think they both have that. What's the word I'm looking for?
Je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, they both have that sort of thing, and also sort of like their racial makeup is atypical and fits into a.
Mm-hmm.
They're both decidedly non-white, but also yet. They're not uncomfortably a minority for the sort of the body electorate, I think. You know, they're kind of like fit in a Benetton commercial type.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea till I started to look into it that she was I just assumed she was black. And,
right.
And when I looked into it, I was surprised to see the makeup. But, I mean, the thing about Gillibrand, I'm thinking Gillibrand, Harris, whatever, senators, freshmen. Gillibrand's not actually freshman senator. Kamala Harris is. It seems like she's been around for a long time, but she's only been a senator
she's got that feel.
She's only been around a couple of years, but of course Obama had been a freshman senator when he was elected, so that's not a disqualifying characteristic. But here's the thing, Scott. This is why she will be a top-tier candidate.
Odds-on favorite right now, I think.
Well, she's not, let me put it this way, she's not the favorite. So the thing about Kamala Harris or Kamala, whatever, is that, yeah, she might be the odds-on favorite. She's, let's put it this way, she's not the favorite. In a field that could be as many as a couple dozen candidates or more, where you've got a guy like Joe Biden, who by default and name recognition is leading the field, you don't really expect that to continue. But here's the thing. The Democratic
white guy, Tim, come on. He's not going to make
it. Well, that's exactly the point I'm ready to make, okay? The Democrats have become a party of identity politics. It matters what your demographic profile is.
It's and the most important thing about you, perhaps.
That's exactly right. And if it continues that way, then she is, as I wrote on LibertyNation.com this week, she is in the catbird seat because, you know, you've got these other candidates like Gillibrand, Castro, Elizabeth Warren, people like this.
White, all of them.
But they they check some of the boxes. They're a woman or the
women.
Castro is a Hispanic. Okay. But Kamala Harris, she's got it all. She's a woman of color. She's a child of two immigrants, one from Jamaica, one from India. She's completely unstained by white privilege or toxic masculinity.
Right.
She's young enough at 54 years old to attract millennial support. She's not going to be seen as one of those old
dinosaur, that are unsupportable.
And of course, she is going to have an unabashed progressive agenda coming from the state that defines the brand of progressivism.
Well, let's talk about that progressive agenda for a second, because there's New York Times made some headlines. They put out a hit piece, sort of. How this works in the publishing world is like you can see like, okay, when one of these things happen, an announcement like this is made, what do we have as a response? Is it how she was brave and honorable in her earlier service, or, you know, her struggling, her rise to power through struggles, or is it the anti-hero portrayal of how she was villainous or whatever? And that lets you know what the organization's bias is, who they're supporting.
Mm-hmm.
And the New York Times is not all in on Kamala Harris. They published a...
she was insufficiently progressive as a prosecutor.
Well, that's right.
In
California. So she has branded herself. So just to be clear, Tim, she's branded herself as the progressive prosecutor.
Right.
That's how she's trying to sell, because right now there's a lot of hostility, especially in the Democrat primary party ranks, of anybody who spent a lot of time putting black and brown men behind bars, especially for drug crime, okay, or crime that is not common law crime, you know, rape, arson, murder, that kind of stuff. And unfortunately for Kamala Harris, she did that for a lot of years. That was her job. She was prosecutor in San Francisco. And so this op-ed was written by a law professor in San Francisco, and it basically just detailed how Kamala Harris was not a progressive prosecutor. And I can tell you, I appreciate progressive prosecution. Philadelphia, for instance, right now happens to have, in D.A. Krasner, a progressive prosecutor.
Well, it depends. You've got to define what you mean by progressive.
I'm about to do it right this second, okay?
Okay, good.
Here's what a progressive prosecutor does. When they find out that there's a dirty cop on the street who lies on the stand, what they don't do is make the defendants who are trying to expose that go through procedural hurdles and tricks and fight tooth and nail to make sure that that person's lies aren't exposed. But in fact, they are proactive and they say, we've got a problem here with a lying cop who plants evidence, and let's get it. Let's take the initiative and get this going. Or they say, for instance, a progressive prosecutor might say, gee, we're spending 14% of our department resources on misdemeanor marijuana cases. How is this helping society?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and, as a political decision, decide we have to triage. You know, we only have a limited amount of resources. Let's not move on these marijuana misdemeanor prosecutions, and instead we'll focus on the aggravated assaults or the stalking threats or the identity theft, whatever it may be. That's progressive prosecution in its best instances.
Fair enough.
I don't know what Kamala Harris means. I guess that she now wants to be called a progressive,
but
she was a prosecutor?
The problem is that the way your use of the word progressive is very different than what the left is looking at it. And she's taking a lot of heat for not being a progressive prosecutor because she isn't advancing causes of the progressive movement.
That can be part of it, too.
And so it's it.
She was, however, so just to be clear, the one thing you could say that she was progressive on, and I just want to state, you know, for the record that I have examined a record, she is anti-death penalty and seems fairly stalwart on that. And to the extent that maybe it even against her sort of her politics. So in other words, she may actually have some principle there.
She's taking some heat from the other side,
yes,
about the fact that she didn't press for the death penalty for a cop killer.
Right. Now, that is good in the sense of if it's principled objection to the death penalty, which I have, and I think all Americans should have, given the evidence, then I think it's laudable. But I applauded Kamala Harris in print last week in her questioning of Attorney General nominee Barr in demanding basically an answer from him on the Cole memorandum stuff and how the department would go ahead with weed prosecutions going forward. That's now a progressive issue as well. And I think that, Tim, her commitment on that is bunk. So let's play. This is a clip.
Do we want to do her actual announcement thing first? Or
if you want to fire it.
Okay. Let me fire that just to sort of set the context, because it's worthy of. On the other hand, you know, I want to compare it to Gillibrand's, so maybe we'll do a side-by-side comparison later.
All right, so
you're on the topic of.
So this is what she said when she joined Cory Booker's bill to decriminalize marijuana at the federal level.
And this is in 2014.
No, this is the
current.
This is her current one. Yes.
Oh, okay.
I am proud to formally announce that I'm signing on to the Marijuana Justice Act. It's the smart thing to do. It's the right thing to do. And I know this as a former prosecutor. I know it as a senator. And I know it when I just look at what we want as a country and where we need to be instead of where we've been. Let's get smart.
Let's get smart, Tim. What
Get Smart, what, wasn't that a TV show?
What more can you ask for than that? Let's get on board. Well, let's get in our time machines and go way, way, way back. Now, this is not from 1984. This is not from 1994. And this is not from 2004. This is from 2014. And you know, everybody's entitled to change their mind. And I would hope that our chosen leaders would be open to changing their mind when new evidence and experience and wisdom present themselves. But we do have to think of on major policy issues, if you have a total and complete 180 on them, maybe you should come out and explain why. If we're to think that you're at all sincere,
you know what? Give a credible explanation,
yeah,
because I have a thing about candidates who were pro-choice and then suddenly become pro-life when they're running for the Republican presidential nomination.
Yeah.
Are you listening, Mitt Romney? And there's others as well who
The Donald
was pro-choice. That's
absolutely
true.
No, he's true. There's so much hypocrisy out there. And the reason why I think it's vitally important, Tim, is not just to call somebody like Kamala Harris out as being a hypocrite, but it's to say, for me anyway, if I were a Democrat Party primary voter, I would want to make sure that the person who I was voting for, that the values they espoused were core values and not values that they thought would just gain them the office.
Yeah.
So this is what she had to say so many years ago in 2014 on the issue of marijuana legalization.
We asked California's current top cop, Kamala Harris, for her position on this controversial issue.
Your opponent, okay, Ron Gold, has said that he is for the legalization of marijuana recreationally. Your thoughts on that?
That he is entitled to his opinion.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. He's entitled to his opinion.
And the laughing.
And then she wouldn't. But she wouldn't say that she was against it, just that.
Oh, she is expert.
So you're saying she's not really committed on the issue.
She's totally non-committed. She sees it as a vehicle to get some more votes. And I actually think that that's fine. In other words, if you want to go ahead and vote for freedom just because it gets you votes, then that's fine. But I want to be mindful that that's why you're doing it and not because you appreciate freedom.
Okay, now I'm going to play you something that she said in 2017. This was 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this is on a foreign policy issue. And tell me if you can tell the difference between Kamala Harris and Dick Cheney.
In the midst of uncertainty and turmoil,
America's support for Israel's security must be rock solid. And as ISIS and civil war in Syria destabilize the region, displacing millions and threatening shared security interests, we must support all those affected by ongoing violence and terror, and we must stand with Israel.
Okay, now, first of all, Israel is not a popular cause on the far left,
nope,
or even on the moderate left. They try to pretend, you know, it's one thing to say, yeah, I support Israel. And, you know, most leftists will say, yeah, I support Israel, and then they don't want to discuss it more. But she's gone on record as being almost indistinguishable from the neoconservative position.
Has she walked that back? Or is
she
that
has,
her current?
Well, she, you mean try to explain it away? She hasn't, I think, responded to it yet, but it's getting big on the left, this fact that she...
It's a
neocon thing.
It's a good moment, though, because of the whole Tamika Mallory Women's March anti-Semitism walkback that's occurring now, which is that the women who started the Women's March are virulently anti-Semitic. And somehow that was overlooked by the other.
It's remarkable. And it's always the people on the right that are accused of being anti-Semitic,
right,
which is funny on its face because they're the ones that support Israel, the only Jewish state in the world,
right,
more than anybody else.
Yeah.
So maybe
this is a good moment for that to kind of be out there, that the if in fact the BDS or boycott, divest, sanctions movement is ebbing. I don't know.
Now, let's listen to her announcement.
All right.
Okay.
This is not the announcement that she made at the Judiciary Committee hearing, right?
Mr. Chairman, we welcome you to the confirmation, Mr. Chairman, of Brett Kavanaugh, Chairman.
All right,
good morning. I welcome everyone to this confirmation hearing on the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chairman.
To serve as Associate Justice.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized for a question before we proceed.
Regular order, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like.
Okay, Scott, that was her unofficial entry into the presidential race. But listen to her, and then we're going to play Kirsten Gillibrand's too, because there's a theme here. Here's Kamala Harris. I keep changing back and
forth. We'll settle on something at some point.
It's a time of transition
in Ms. Harris's.
Kamala Harris announcing her candidacy.
Truth, justice, decency, equality, freedom, democracy.
Cool music.
These aren't just words. They're the values we as Americans cherish, and they're all on the line now. The future of our country depends on you and millions of others lifting our voices to fight for our American values. That's why I'm running for President of the United States.
Now, there's not one thing in there that anybody could be opposed
right.
to.
Right, you can't object to any of it.
Democracy,
right,
freedom, justice.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no there.
Right.
There's not a single policy. There's not a, we need to get serious about climate change. There's not a, I'm going to fight for Medicare for all or universal health care.
This is a page right out of the Obama. You know, Obama said that he himself said that he made a good candidate because other people could place their aspirations and wishes and wants on him. So that's the way going forward, is you just talk about hopes and dreams and justice for all and the fruited plain, and hopefully that'll carry you through.
He was, Obama was someone who was like a Rorschach test. You could look at him from so many different angles and see what you wanted to see if you were one of those people inclined to vote for him. But now let's
big government socialist wannabe who would corrupt our healthcare system and yield more government spending than ever before, and that's somehow precisely what we got.
But the political scientist in me listens to an ad like that and said there's nothing there. There's not one thing she says that distinguishes her from every Democrat and Republican. I mean, if there's other people that run the Trump, they're all going
to
be.
You're approaching it logically. You have to approach it emotionally. It's about how she makes those people feel about voting for her. The feeling of voting for her, that they are a good person who wants good things, regardless of whether
As opposed to Trump, who's a bad person who wants bad things.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Sure, I got that. Okay. It's a lot more sophisticated than I even realized until you deconstructed it for me. Now let's take a very different approach from Kirsten Gillibrand. Okay.
Senator from New York, who is famous in my eyes for advocating, and I mean this literally, for no due process rights for men who are accused of sexual assault. She believes that if a woman accuses a man of sexual assault, that that should end that man's, not life in terms of that he should be put to death, but he should be kicked out of college, he should be put behind bars, whatever it may be, without due process rights. That's Kirsten Gillibrand's Me Too position.
Okay, so that's an issue-based objection. But a personality-based objection is what I have. I'm in the unique position now, Scott, take note of the date, because it may not happen again, where I'm going to actually defend the Clintons.
Okay. What is it, the 23rd?
The 24th of January, right. 2019. Take note of the date. And I'm going to cite it, too, when it said, hey, I'm objective about Hillary Clinton. But here's the point. Okay, Hillary Clinton, when she vacated her Senate seat to become Secretary of State, essentially handed her Senate seat over to Kirsten Gillibrand. Certainly. Okay, she
for safekeeping.
For safekeeping in case you needed it back. Yeah. So Gillibrand then was all
down. Until Chelsea reaches the right age.
Yeah. So Gillibrand was all down with the Clinton cause, and she was, you know, big backer of her.
You're saying back when Hillary Clinton was very popular, Kirsten Gillibrand backed.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
No, but here's the point. Okay, so she backed her, of course, big time in the 2016 campaign. And then almost as soon as Hillary Clinton lost, Gillibrand, for political positioning for her inevitable presidential run.
It doesn't look good on
you. You know what she does? She goes out there and says, well, you know what? As in terms of the Me Too movement, so she can associate herself with that, I think maybe Bill Clinton should have resigned from presidency
now,
in the 1990s.
Yeah.
And you know what? If I'm the Clintons, I'm sitting there going, you little, you know.
You took my largesse when it was offered. And then the minute that the well dried up, you turn your back.
See, to me, I look at that and I say, that's an immediate disqualifier. Someone who's that blatantly, flagrantly political. Well, but listen to her. Okay, listen to her announcement of her candidacy. Then I'm
going to
break it
down. I'm going to run for president of the United States because as a young mom, I will fight for your children as hard as I would fight for my own. I believe that healthcare should be a right and not a privilege. I believe we should have better public schools because it shouldn't matter what block you grow up on. I believe we need to start rewarding work in this country again, because anybody who wants to work hard should be able to get whatever training they need to earn their way into the middle class and to be able to have the American dream, which has always been for everyone.
Okay, now let me deconstruct that for you. Let me do a translation for our dear listeners here, okay, in how she selected every single word in there, okay? She says she starts out by saying she's a young mom, so she projects her womanhood and her youth.
Uh-huh.
Then she said healthcare is a right, which I've never seen.
She wants it to be a right.
She wants it to be a right. So she hits the bullseye, you know, for leftists who want fully socialized healthcare.
Right.
Then she said she wants better schools, translation, throw even more money at failing public schools. She wants to start rewarding work in this country again.
I don't even know what that means. For a change, we're going to start rewarding work.
But, of course, that makes her seem like she's down with the common folks, Scott.
Yeah. Well, no, she wants work. So if you're a worker, it's sort of I remember when Clinton had working families. That was the Clinton invention, which was great. Okay,
it's like everybody
thinks they're in a working family. There's no human. You could be a welfare queen or a billionaire. Okay, and you still think, yeah, we're a working family. You know,
yeah, that's the most cleverly poll tested phrase in a town vote. But she also. So Gillibrand also brings up training for people to get new jobs, which of course means more government spending.
Absolutely, yeah.
And of course she closes with the American dream for everyone. So, you know, at least in her case, there are some of these things.
Hallelujah.
I will say, at least in her case, she says some things that you could say you're for or against. Okay, unlike
it's a bit more
Kamala,
specific. Which, by
Kamala
the way,
Harris.
Sadly, I think the lesson will the takeaway will be from that is that don't do what Gillibrand did. In other words, the lesson I think is going to be do it like Harris. Be aspirational and nonspecific rather than saying anything that somebody can oppose. Because right now we're speaking in opposition to the specific items that Gillibrand said, and we're not speaking in opposition to the specific items about Kamala Harris because there's nothing to object to, right?
I will say this. I think Kamala Harris, I think she'll go deep into the primaries. I mean, it seems to make sense.
She's got the kind of,
assuming she's got a good organization. Kirsten Gillibrand, okay, to me.
She does have a good organization. She hired some fancy lawyer guy.
Who, Harris?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's getting
insider for her general counsel for her campaign. So she's off to the races. That's no piker.
She is top tier. Yeah. Gillibrand, on the other hand, I'll tell you what, I've never seen or rarely seen a more vacuous candidate than her.
She offers
absolutely nothing. She was a zero senator, backbencher, inconsequential, and then suddenly became woke.
Yeah.
She became woke, Scott.
So
you know,
she got
just
a ton
when
of press from Emma Sulkowicz is the name of the NYU student who lied about being raped by a man named Paul Nungesser.
Right.
She complained to university authorities and the police, and there was zero evidence to be found to support the rape because, in fact, it didn't happen. This is the woman who started that Bear the Weight campaign where she carried a mattress all over campus
lying about this guy
raping her. And I keep saying lying about it, and you may say, well, why do you know – can you know if it's a lie? And the reason why we know is because we have the Facebook messages and the text messages from after the alleged event where she went on as basically somebody who was interested in a romantic relationship with this guy
Maybe she suddenly became woke, Scott.
Right,
And suddenly saw the
– Gillibrand made a name for herself by having this woman come to the State of the Union and following her around with the mattress. So she's a – And she has not apologized to Mr. Nungesser or anybody else.
Nor will she.
Exactly right. Nor because she's shameless. But I see that the time grows long in our podcast.
It's true.
And we have not yet discussed the Indians versus the Catholics, which I think animates my existence right now. This is the big story of the year as far as I'm concerned.
It's remarkable how the legs that this story has grown. And the thing that makes it so complicated, the reason I could hardly understand it from the beginning, was it's like having a game with three teams on the field. You know, if it's the Eagles against the Jets, you root for the Eagles, you root for the Jets, you see their but when you throw in a third team, let's say the Giants enter the field, now you've got the Indians, you've got the black nationalists, and you've got the white Catholic kids. And so for so long, it was hard to understand. And the media just cashed in on the fact that they could take 2 minutes out of 2 hours of footage
and destroy a white kid.
And make it look like these
This is
kids.
A racial identity story.
Absolutely.
This is about the destruction of a white teenager because he's a white teenager wearing a MAGA hat. And if you can take away anything from this story, it's that this Mr. Nathan Phillips, the elder of whatever tribe he's a part of.
Wonderful, gentle, peaceful, valiant.
That's exactly right, Tim. That he's not wonderful, that he's not gentle, and that he's not peaceful. And that his actions are not mistaken. That he is a malignant actor. And in fact, he's one of the worst people in the world. Because what he wants to do is he wants to ruin the life of a 16-year-old boy in the United States of America for the sole reason of wearing a MAGA hat once at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. He's lied about his own military service repeatedly.
Oh, he's a Vietnam-era veteran. Yeah. When it was originally presented that he was a Vietnam veteran, and you know what? That's stolen valor. That's the end of the discussion for me, because that, to me, is one of the most despicable things you can do.
Especially for somebody who probably, you know, he and his friends are like anti-war, right? You'd guess.
You think he's friends with Senator Blumenthal of Connecticut and other stolen valor.
So they served in the same unit, I think, over there, Tim. Yeah. brothers and
it reminds me of
Band of Brothers.
Trading Places. I was in Dang, Nang, Vang. Agent Orange, they call me. Agent Orange, that was my name. We can make it, baby.
All right.
Witch.
We don't want to get too much into quoting that.
Witch. It rhymes with.
So he's lied. What he does is he says, I'm from Vietnam Times, okay? And what that allows people to do is then believe that he's a Vietnam veteran, and he'll be on television programs where somebody says he's a Vietnam veteran, and he doesn't jump up and correct them and say, no, I'm not a Vietnam veteran. He goes through this thing where he just says, this is him explaining it to CBS News.
Some question about the nature of your military service, and this is a good chance to clear it up. You were a veteran. You served in the Marine Corps. Some have said that you were a Vietnam veteran. I don't believe you have said that. What exactly is the nature of your service?
I went to boot camp. I stayed there. That Marine Corps was a reservist guy, so I stayed in the reserves for a couple years. That was during the time of the American Indian Movement and the AIM trials, and there was a lot of things going on during those years. And the Vietnam War was still going on.
So to be clear, you served in the Marines at the time that Vietnam was going on, but you did not serve overseas.
What I've always said is I've never stepped foot in South Vietnam. And that's, I don't know how much clearer can that be?
Tim, instead of saying, so here's the record, by the way. We've heard Mr. Phillips' account of it. Here's what happened. He was a Marine reservist, and I believe it was in Oklahoma or Kansas, where he served for a couple years as a refrigerator mechanic. And then he was in California for a couple years, also as a refrigerator mechanic. So he could have said, absolutely, I was never in Vietnam. In fact, I was a refrigerator mechanic, stateside. But he doesn't say that. He goes into this American Indian business, and you're kind of confused about, well, he wasn't in South Vietnam. Could he have been in Laos Vietnam?
This is a guy who was at a political rally being run by sort of radical indigenous people.
That's what he does for a living. Yeah, he's a professional Indian who shows up. And in fact, so for people who aren't aware, so let me just paint the picture of this story. Here's what happens. He goes to a rally, and they did have a permit to rally there. There were three groups.
Right.
There's the American Indian groups that have a permit to rally for whatever they're rallying against. There's the Catholic school kids who had been to a trip to the March for Life and were
getting ready to go home.
They were gathering at the Lincoln Memorial as a spot just to get on their buses where they could congregate. And then you have the Black Israelites. Now, you can't appreciate what the Black Israelites are doing without playing their clip. And here's the thing. It's disgusting language. So you've got a little kid in the room. You don't want to play this. But here's what the Black Israelites are all about.
On the back of your dollar bill, it says, "In God we trust, but you give faggots rights."
So that's what these kids have to contend with, being basically they're being screamed at by these
Black Israelites. Went on for about an hour of this screaming.
And then this Nathan Phillips takes his drum and walks to the face of this kid. And
that's an important point. He walked to the kid.
Yeah.
They didn't confront him media presented.
That's because this was carefully constructed. Mr. Phillips and his group had video. They were taking video, and they released video designed to make it look like a lie, to make it look like they had been surrounded by these young, mostly white high school students, and basically they were being put upon, when in fact the exact opposite is the truth. The kids didn't understand what the Indians were having to do with it. They're reacting to these vile statements by the Black Israelites, who I presume, you know, if you haven't seen them before in person, they are kind of a striking lot. They dress sort of like in a modified, almost Hasidic garb with what looks like Jewish religious regalia.
It's a religious
yet
cult.
At the same time, they have the physical appearance I was describing to somebody else, if I was shooting a movie and I said, listen, I need to populate a scene with members of a black prison gang. Where could I get people that might look like that? Oh, I've got a great look for you. Here, yeah. Go with these Israelites. Mm-hmm. And so we have, you know, why would somebody maybe be intimidated by somebody that outweighs them by 100 pounds and is a foot taller than them and 20 years older, screaming epithets at them like these black Israelites are doing? That's what these kids were facing. But fortunately, God bless those black Israelites, Tim, because they were recording the whole thing. And it's their video that these other – we're seeing now – we see the other bits and pieces of what really happened. So we know that Phillips lies about the whole thing. He says – he calls the white kids beasts that were in the process of attacking the black Israelites. It's all lies.
And but he presented different stories in different places as well.
Yes.
Because he admitted in one interview, he stipulated that these black Israelites had been shouting invective and horrible things, racist, homophobic stuff at these white kids for a long time. But then he goes on to say, but then as I approached them, I saw that they were very threatening to me.
Yeah, well, you know where he recognized that look? The threatening look, do you know how he got that? How did he process it? He'd seen it in Vietnam, Tim. Oh. That's in his service is where he got that.
But let me just say in all of this.
He's seen the face of evil over there. Yes. In his refrigerator mechanic in Kansas. Reefer mech is what they call it.
So you had the black group, you had the white group, and you had the Indian group. Okay. They all did what they came to do. But it was the media that took 2 hours of footage, and they could have constructed it as a black hate group who was trying to threaten.
Yes.
They could easily have presented it.
Oh, you can't do a story on those people. That doesn't fit any
of the
boxes.
But the best way to handle it, Scott, would have been not to report it at all because there's no story there.
Well, here's the story. We can ruin the life of a kid who wore a MAGA hat out in public
because they didn't like his smirk.
That serves as a vehicle because they all got bullied or whatever. He reminded of a kid in their high school. So this is why, again, I want to focus again just for a second on the evil actions of Mr. Nathan Phillips. So after lying about everything that happened, okay, that would be bad enough. But what's his prescription? This is what he wants to have happen to the kids.
We demand that the students of Covington Catholic High School be reprimanded, not just by the school officials, but as seniors, but by their upcoming universities. We demand the Catholic Church hold themselves responsible for years of genocide that our indigenous people have endured.
Okay, so if that wasn't entirely clear, that was Mr. Phillips discussing how they should be expelled or disciplined by future universities. In other words, he was suspecting that some of them were seniors in high school, and he's advocating. So he said that he would hope that some of them would be expelled. And then now he's saying that they should be disciplined because the Catholic schools aren't going to be sufficiently draconian with their punishments for the behavior of nothing, by the way. Smirking inappropriately, I guess, is the behavior. He wants them, their universities. And that statement that he made, that is when he and his group, because what he called himself in prayer. That's what he did when he took his drum and drumstick and put it 6 inches from the face or less of one of these kids.
And because the kid refused to back up, and he had what was, and I said a smirk, but I'm not willing to stipulate that it was a smirk.
Yeah,
it was interpreted that way, but he didn't say a word. He didn't scorn him. He didn't laugh at him.
The one physical gesture that he did do, Tim, was he made a move to calm his friend who seemed like he was going to get ready to mock the Indian guy. And he actually gave him a wave of like a, hey, settle down. Just let this guy do his thing wave.
Right.
And that's what he said he did. So I agree, by the way. I don't think it was a smirk either. I think it was literally a person not being able to process and react to what was happening at the time. He didn't understand what was happening at first. They say he and some of the kids thought that the Indians were actually aiding their chant. So
that's
they
what
got
made
in,
it
they
so
went into
confusing.
A school spirit chant in order to drown out the epithets of the black Israelites. And the school kids said that they thought maybe the Indians were helping kind of drum up the noise to drown out the bigoted statements of the black Israelites. And if you look at the video, it seems like some of them are like, oh, hey, yeah, like here's this group who's helping us out.
Yes.
And then it became apparent that that wasn't the case, that Phillips was going to be confrontational. But we just want to strive from what I was going to say, which is that he made that statement, Tim, when he and his group were interrupting the Catholic Mass at the cathedral in D.C. So they took their hatred against Catholics, and you know, to everything he does, if you listen to his interviews, it's all I'm praying this and I'm praying that, and he says right. It gets to excuse his behavior because the journalists that are interviewing him are less likely to challenge. Why doesn't anybody say, why do you pray with walking up to somebody and sticking a drum in their face and beating it? That's your prayer. But anyway, that's what he wants for his prayer. But to go and interrupt, there's some Catholics who are celebrating Mass. They have nothing to do with any of this.
Right.
But he thinks that it's okay to go into the sanctuary and beat his drums, and they had to have security stop him and his group.
And of course,
he's an anti-Catholic bigot, and he's a disgusting person, and more people should be calling him out for it.
And he's doing it, though, because he knows that the media will take the bait. He knows that the media, which is so virulently anti-Trump, so out of control, I mean, to a point of psychosis, that they're going to just eat this stuff right up. If it was a different climate, a normal climate, the kind of climate you and I grew up in, those white kids who restrained themselves, by the way, I mean, let's give them the credit for restraint for what the
10 out of 10, I was going to say performance, but he... If that was your kid or your relation, you'd think, oh,
you'd
my God,
proud
how
of him.
Great the job they did. You didn't... I would have... You could beat a drum 3 inches in front of my face and think I'm not going to react physically? I don't think so.
That, and yet now...
Which is, by the way, why I believe he did it. In other words, to provoke reaction.
These kids are what you would... When we were growing up, okay, and there's some distance between when you grew up and when I did.
Let's be clear about that.
This is what sort of typical, normal, average kids in America looked like, and you'd hope acted like, with incredible restraint. And the response around the country from the haters on the left have been to threaten the school. One person sent out a message that he'd like to blow up the school with the kids in it. That's probably the most extreme thing, but the level of hatred for these kids.
The doxing.
Oh, yes.
Advocated away. For by mainstream journalists and elected officials. It's absolutely disgusting. These kids are so respectful. I actually had a thought where I wanted to say to them, hey, you got to toughen up a little bit. When they were being called the names, and then the kid says, Tim, we asked for permission to launch into our school spirit cheer. I actually heard that and thought, what's wrong with kids today? Yeah. They're in a public place. And in response to what we just heard them being screamed
they're
at,
being they're being overly
waiting,
respectful.
They're waiting for permission.
Yeah.
not to go scream in the faces of the black Israelites, but to say their own school spirit cheer.
They're being too respectful.
That to me is the thing. All right, well, listen, we promised Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in the teaser, so let's finish with her. A little candy for the left, and
this is where Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and thank you for giving me
Cortez. Let's roll our
the people on the left roll the R's
Archie's,
more than the
Archie's
people on
excited.
The right. You notice that whole thing? This is the view of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and I've shamelessly taken a second opportunity to roll the R's and use my fake Hispanic accent. This is the view of her and her cohorts of climate change and what it will mean for the country.
Mm-hmm. Millennials and people and, you know, Gen Z and all these folks that come after us are looking up and we're like, the world is going to end in 12 years if we don't address climate change. And your biggest issue is how are we going to pay for it?
Mm-hmm. You're worried about money when the world is coming to an end.
It's perfect because it's why they have to say Donald Trump is Hitler. Because if Donald Trump is Hitler, then I can do anything to oppose Hitler, and I need not be scrutinized for it. And it's the exact same reason with this climate change business. If the world really were going to end in 12 years, well, then what the hell are we standing around for about worrying about the cost? Let's just pass it all. Let's pass all the legislation and give you all the power, AOC. Not buying it over here.
Well, the biblical assertion is, you know, if none of what's contained herein is true, then let's eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we shall die.
From your mouth to God's ears.
Absolutely.
That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining us. Do all the good stuff. Like, comment, and subscribe. This is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. For Tim Donner, this is Scott DiCosenza. Bye-bye.
See you next time.